Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the How to Become an Elite Financial Advisor podcast. I wanted to extend a personal invitation. If you had questions about coming to our How to Charge Live event in April of 2025, that you would go to howtocharge.live.com. That's howtocharge.live.com. Click on a button there that says schedule the call. And I'd love to answer any questions you have about coming to our event in April. It will sell out, but if you have questions, I want to answer them as quickly as possible so you can get your seat to that event. I look forward to seeing you here with us in April. And now, enjoy today's episode.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm here with Andy. My voice is partially here today.
Yeah, it's nice to have some of your voice. Maybe ask the whole thing to show up next time. No, it's because you're working hard. We had a training last week in California, and you used it a lot. And we blessed the people, but it cost you partially your voice.
It did.
But we have a microphone, and we will turn you up. Perfect. So thanks for being here today, Sten. We're going to talk about the most common question we get asked as people who coach advisors, which is, how do I get more clients? But we're going to talk about a way that we've defined really that category and understanding it so that you end up doing the right activity to get prospects and to get ideal clients. Yep. And we call it the prospecting spectrum. In the notes of this episode, you will, however you're listening to it, you'll click there and you'll find a way to download that. And so you can have it and work through it as a team. So, Sten, tell me, what is the average? You know, we try to think average to elite filter. What's the average experience for advisors when it comes to prospecting and getting clients?
I think the ultimate goal for all advisors should be whatever you're doing from a prospecting standpoint should bring in consistent ideal clients. I think we could all agree that's the ultimate goal.
It's a worthy goal, yes.
It is elusive to most of us, if not all of us, to some degree. I think what the industry teaches us is activity at all costs. And what that leads you down the road of is maybe one inconsistent, unideal clients. If you keep doing that long and hard enough, maybe you start getting some consistent, unideal clients. And I think the consistency at some point is what we settle for, where we say, hey, look, we did it. Our goal and what I challenge advisors we coach to is if you are not getting consistent ideal clients, and hopefully you've defined what an ideal client is for you, then you should be willing to question your prospecting process. We do not think there's one magic way to prospect. We've met hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of advisors, and we see a lot of different ways to attract clients, to convert them, to get great referrals. But as we walk you through the spectrum, we want to open your mind and bring some awareness to, hey, here's potentially the categories that people can prospect in. What is an average version of this category? What's an elite version, which actually gets you the results you want? And then are there maybe some categories on the spectrum that you should stay away from?
Yeah. So let's start. And I think most, if not all advisors start with this first part of the spectrum, unless they somehow are brought into someone else's book of business or family business, right?
Yeah. Brute force. This is how I entered the business. You know, brute force, if it is about calling a bunch of people, it's all about call lists. When you hear the law of kind of numbers in finance, where it's, hey, if you call 10, you'll contact three and maybe you'll get one meeting. This is so prevalent in our business that it can work at times. And I think the downside to a lot of average activity is that it keeps us stuck there because sometimes it just works well enough. And so brute force may be necessary. If you're getting into the business like I did in a cold market, I just needed to call a bunch of people. I was a young advisor. I wasn't really a great business owner yet. I wasn't necessarily creative. I just needed to match what the industry was telling me to do and then try to do it harder and better than everyone else. And that was my path to success. I'm thankful I figured out pretty quickly, like I didn't want to keep doing that forever, that there must be a better way. So for us, as we coach advisors, brute force feels like it's like a temporary bridge to get some foundation in the business. But the hope and the goal should be as you move past brute force at some point to where it's not, I'll talk to anybody and everybody. I'm going to work 20 hours a day, 7 days a week just to get enough people.
Yeah.
While it may be necessary, we want to tell you that it's, you don't have to do it that way for very long.
It does seem interesting to me, though, that this is the starting point. I think about if someone is going to come work on a job site and they're going to say, I'm here, guys, to work, and I am ready to learn how to frame a house. They wouldn't be like, well, here's a big pile of wood, and here's some nails and a hammer, and good luck. Like, brute force, just figure it out. Oh. This seems like such a waste of energy in so many ways versus being more intentional about training people.
Yeah.
So
for me, part of the reason EAN exists is because I got tired of trial and error.
Yeah.
To where I was like, I'd meet advisors. I'm like, wait, you're doing the same silly stuff I'm doing. And then 2 years from now, another advisor is going to do the same silly stuff we're doing.
Yeah. Like,
we're just all recreating an average process and hoping a few people make it out the other end alive.
Right.
So we reject that. We reject the average path. And so the brute force is the first one on the spectrum. It's on there because a lot of us do it. But the hope is that we move past it as quick as possible. I don't know if there's really an average or an elite version of brute force. I think brute force in general is average. Yeah. I know as a older advisor, part of me at times realizes, man, if somebody just gets in the business, like, hey, they need to earn their stripes too. Like, they just need to make a bunch of calls. But quickly that passes. And I'm like, but why? Like, why would I doom them to the same average behavior just because I
was? It's like hazing. It's like, why are you hazing? Because I was hazed. Okay. That sounds a little cyclical to me. Yeah, you know, yeah. Like, that doesn't, let's break. What part of this is healthy? Cycle. None of it's healthy other than payback, which I don't think is healthy. So, yeah. So it's not, I think another good filter to put on it is there an elite version? If there's not, then stop doing it completely.
That's right.
Right. So how do we move beyond brute force? What's the next area we could find prospects in?
A next average or a next natural progression would be your existing network, which from a industry path usually is still pretty average. It's just call the people you know, and hopefully they'll do business with you because they want you to do well.
Right.
And maybe they buy a term insurance policy or move some assets to you just because they know you. I never wanted to get a client just because they felt like they owed me something.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring such value to them that they are better off with me than the other advisor or without an advisor. So I think an average version of your existing network is just the relationship crutch.
Yeah.
It's, hey, you know me, I know you. You might as well just do business with me as opposed to somebody you don't know.
Yeah.
And I did some of that. And I look back and I'm like, I didn't know enough. I didn't really do harm, but knowing what I know now, I could have given them much better advice.
Yeah.
So sometimes this looks like maybe bringing joint work to your existing network is a more elite version of your existing network as opposed to trying to go in alone.
Right.
For me, I chose to jump my existing network and get more experience and then go back to them when they started seeing me as a professional and they started asking me for help.
Right.
I'd prefer not to have to be the person at family gatherings, sporting events, to where my reputation is the one always initiating those interactions or pitching people.
Yeah.
But I definitely want to be seen as a resource for them. So existing network, you can do that in an elite way. But I chose to jump it, come up with some better ideas, and then go back to it.
Yeah. Again, one of our first is talk to strangers about things you don't really understand. And the next is talk to people you really care about and have deep relationships with things you don't really fully understand. And so we're not off to a great start, which is why you're seeing so many people burn out in the business. But I do think that a more elite way of doing it, and I appreciate bringing that up on a really practical level, especially if you're newer in the business, is don't go in it alone. Don't go in with very little training to people you know and care about, your existing network, without someone who's there. And I've just heard again and again the value of having someone in the room that has so many more reps to just help you do a more thorough job.
Yep. Next is your created network. If you are a rainmaker, this maybe is so natural to you, you don't even know you do it, that wherever you go, people are drawn to you and you're just well connected and people like you. So they send you business. They see you as a professional. So they send you business. For me, this requires more effort. There has to be like a business plan around this for me to track the people I meet. What do they actually do? How am I adding value to them consistently? This could look like me getting them on an email list and then sending them things to trigger them about what I do. But for some advisors, they just do this naturally.
Yeah.
The average version of this is that I'm just bumping into people and hopefully naturally I just have
more zero tracking of it. It is purely, gosh, I haven't talked to them in a while, you know, and again, one of the problems of that is it can work to some degree. Right.
Yeah.
But I love the push on that, of that there's an average way to do it, which is essentially what comes naturally to you. You have a natural gift for connecting with people and finding a way to build trust. But the elite version is simply add on some administrative tracking, which ironically, the people who are usually most gifted at that relational are the weakest at the tracking of it. So you can, that can become a superpower very, very quickly if you are good at connecting and good at tracking.
Yeah, and that could be as to the degree where you get some admin support on that, and you get really good at having your CRM say, oh, I met this person, here's the business they're in, oh, here are their interests and their hobbies. And then periodically you run a list of people that like golf or hunting events, or there's a way to really cultivate that natural network. I look back when I moved to Nashville, and I'm like, how many people have I met here in the last 13, 14 years that I totally forgot about?
Yeah.
That I had a great, meaningful interaction with, that maybe I even did some business with at one point. But as I moved my business around and evolved as an advisor, I've had no record of them at all.
Yeah.
And so I think as you, if you say, I like building a natural network, I'm a networker, I'm a rainmaker, our push to you to take that from average to elite would be have a good system around it.
Yeah. So again, the first couple almost completely rely on you, your natural ability. You're just sort of like brute force. Just, it's hours. You really can't, there's no real way to systematize this. It's just hours. You got to put in the hours. That's where you start with the spectrum.
Yep.
How can we get better? What's the next ones?
Next one is referral networks. We call centers of influence. We don't use that word. And that's a bad word at EAN. Mm-hmm. We call them idea partners, that professionals we know and network with have so much knowledge to share with us that will really help our clients and really help us prospect.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I think of referral networks, mainly I'm going to them for their ideas, because I'm going to use those ideas, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But our industry does teach that you can cultivate relationships with other professionals. And if done well, an average version of this is, oh, I met with that CPA once or twice, took him or her to lunch. Man, I hope they think about me someday when they have a referral.
Mm-hmm.
That usually doesn't go well. Don't forget that other professionals have busy lives too. They're going home thinking about their kids' sports game. Yeah. They're trying to grow their own business. So the idea that they're going to remember you beyond that day that you met with them would be a little naive.
Yeah.
So what is your process around being a resource to them, tracking how often you've talked to them, sending them information that helps their clients? There's an elite way to manage that network, similar to a social network. There's a different way to manage a professional network and get more referrals out of them.
You consider this, if you're wondering how often they think about you and sending you a client, how often do you think about them and sending them a client? And if you're like, uh-oh, I don't think about sending clients to them very much.
Yeah.
Because again, if it's about helping the clients, then it's about obviously knowing the client and then sending them to the best resource, which we teach through, idea partner philosophy. Then, there can be a lot of activity between you and your idea partners, but simply relying on other people to wake up and think about your business, which sounds like silly, or we're making a joke, we're not. Like the idea that someone else is waking up and thinking about how can I help send you business, it's unlikely.
Yep.
Now, if you have a good relationship, you certainly can become very referable and you can refer people to them, but it's just so fascinating as we talk to so many different advisors how this is just industry standard. I grow my business through referrals, and we go, really? Like, show us that. And it's sort of something easy to say, but it doesn't usually happen with any regularity.
Yeah. Right? And what I know and why this is such an important topic is of the thousands of advisors we've coached, I mean, maybe we've met a handful that have a built out system that's creating consistent business for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because they're the smartest advisors. Usually they've have great content background, and they built a funnel, and they're doing some online stuff. But it's a fluid machine that keeps working.
Yeah,
that is rare in our business. And so everyone listening, me included, need to evaluate our prospecting methods and say, like, are they actually working? This gets back to where most advisors don't even have a scorecard. You're not tracking how many AMB clients you're adding, how much AUM. And a lot of advisors we coach, we help them segment their book and have a scorecard. And you can actually start tracking like, oh, this isn't working as well as I thought it was.
Yeah.
So the next one is what we spend a lot of time teaching on. It is how we believe every advisor should spend most of their prospecting time. And we call it targeting strategies. As advisors, we are curators of great ideas. And so as we're networking with other professionals, we need what they know. So whenever we meet with an attorney or CPA, real estate agent, property and casualty agent, business attorney, divorce attorney, whoever it is, we're saying, what are your top three ideas that you're using with clients or that you see underutilized?
Mm-hmm.
Once I have an idea from an idea partner, instead of hoping they refer somebody to me, I now can take that idea and I can go find clients with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we find out that, oh, you have a client that works at, we were just in California, Apple. Oh, and you know, there's a special benefit within Apple's benefit packet. Well, now you create a plan to go and communicate that benefit to as many Apple employees as possible.
Mm-hmm.
That is so much more specific and targeted than, hey, go talk to every Apple employee about general financial stuff and tell them you can help them retire and live their dream. Like, that is most of what advisors are doing. But if you can take one specific idea and take it to a specific audience that you know has a problem and use that to pull them into your process, that's what you should be doing every day.
The reason I don't like the old fishing analogy of having the right bait is the fish loses in the whole fishing. But so it's not that, but it is the right of, hey, I know that certain fish like certain bait. Like, people have preferences. People have their own unique situations. And yet with most prospecting activity, it's so generalized.
Mm.
And so to come to someone and say to them, you know, I do a lot of sports stuff. Like, there's businesses that will go to a travel baseball tournament with hundreds of teams, which is thousands of kids, and they will relay baseball gloves. And so they're saying, so let's see, who uses their glove a lot and who has, you know, money to spend and who is going to be, you know, could be available for a few days. It's a travel tournament. So they know right where to go. And you think, well, that's simple. That's oversimplified. No, it's actually just really smart and targeted.
Yeah.
And so I want to really encourage folks. And again, we'll have this download available, this graphic. We also have other episodes we've done on targeting strategies that we have a guide that you can use to start to implement these things. But it is such a paradigm shift from I'm a generalist to general people to I'm going to really specifically target people with a specific idea. It does take more work in the beginning, but it's so much more effective. I mean, it's essentially like, if you're doing target practice and you take the time to line up your shot in a scope, or you just sort of shoot in the general direction.
That's right.
Right.
It is average at best to hope that you just run into people that have the time to solve a problem they don't really understand yet. But when you could take something that you know helps somebody right away and communicate it in such a way that it creates urgency.
Yeah.
I mean, that's us taking our advisor hat off and putting our marketing hat on.
Yeah.
Like, there is a industry that spends billions and billions of dollars just trying to capture people's attention.
Yeah.
And there is an art behind, I know you're busy, but here's something that's really important. And here's why you should give me the time to address it. And I don't think our industry does that well. We hope that the general love of a quality financial plan is enough for people to stop what they're doing and spend time with us. And the data just doesn't support that.
Well, the other thing that you pointed out, and you talk about that 10% group of people, which I'll have you define that, but how much energy goes into this small group of people? So I want you to define who they are, and then who are the other people and how we reach them? Because that really is why the targeting strategy works, I think, so well, is your target is actually the targeting group. The possibilities are way bigger than that 10%. So what's that 10% I'm talking about?
So the 10% is a great book called Blue Ocean Strategy. It talks about most of us are competing in a red ocean, meaning we're all saying the same thing. It's highly competitive. And that 10% of people out there are people that want to buy insurance now, have money to roll over right away.
So, but the 10% being that you said the red ocean, it's red ocean because there's blood in the water. Everyone's fighting over the same thing, right?
That's right. And so the blue ocean, though, is everybody else. They may not want to buy something now, or they don't realize they have a need or a problem. And for me, a lot of that market is busy business owners, people that are in real estate.
Right.
They need our advice and our time and energy. But if I lead with, hey, do you want to buy an insurance policy? Or, hey, roll your assets to me because I'm slightly better or a little different than your current advisor. That's just that confidence does not create urgency.
Right.
And every once in a while, you run into somebody that retires, so they know they need to do something,
right,
or they're mad at their other advisor, so they move to you. And those things are fine. I get those in my practice, but that's not within my control. And so I want my prospecting strategies to be something I can control. That,
yeah,
you know, if I put a dollar in, I get $5 back.
Yeah, that's
at that point, the question is, how many dollars can you put in?
Yeah. That's another aspect of this is control. I mean, the thing you're teaching advisors today is have as much control as you possibly can have. Mm-hmm. The bad news is if it doesn't go well, you know who to blame. But the good news is if it does go well, you know who can take credit, which is do the work, right? Why are some people just more successful than other people? It's because they're doing the work, right? If there's one thing that Kobe Bryant was famous for, it was his hard work. Is it was because he was not naturally gifted? No, he was pretty naturally gifted, right? But it's just putting in the work. And as you move into the spectrum, what you see is more and more control over the activity, which leads to better outcomes.
Yep. The next one is marketing or paid leads. This is a business out there that I think is always trying to figure itself out. We have yet to find a company that just does it right all the time, or else we'd all just be doing that.
Right.
We have some advisors that do it and it works well enough, so they keep paying for it. Others that have tried it and it was a disaster and they'll never do it again. So this one's a little bit elusive, but we do see it enough that we included it on the spectrum.
I'm surprised about how many people are actively engaged. Is the industry priced enough, priceable enough that it's cheap enough, quote unquote, that people are, they're like, I'll keep up with it. I'm just surprised about how many people sort of accept mediocrity in this. I don't know. I'm just surprised.
Yeah, I think about my prospecting approach, there's some things I'm willing to just invest in that have, you know, reasonable, consistent results.
Uh-huh.
And so,
is that where it falls?
If I knew that I was getting consistent referrals from my clients, because we ask really well, that's one thing. If I was then paying for a lead source that brought in, you know, one ideal client a month, which, you know, 10x my investment in that, I'd maybe consider having that as well.
Like,
we are open to a multifaceted prospecting strategy,
that's
not just one
point.
Of these.
Yeah, great point.
But then quickly, we kind of move from marketing and paid leads to content machine, which is where legacy is trying to go. It's so much of these other approaches require Sten as the advisor or your team. It takes a lot of energy. The hope for legacy in the future, and there's some practices that are doing this well, is how do you create enough content and value, whether it's courses or you write a book or you have a list that you cultivate really well and drip on, to where there's a machine that does not require a daily input from me that continuously creates, like, it's podcasts, things like that. So that one is more time consuming up front, more expensive to set up, but that's the longer game that we're working on. In the meantime, we still have to use these other targeting strategies. Natural networks getting bigger. Our referral partners are pretty established. So all these can work. Our challenge to you is to say, do you actually have a plan, or are you just hoping it works out? And then any of these methods you're using, are you doing them at an average level, or are you doing them at an elite level?
Mm-hmm.
And for our coaching program, a lot of times we get advisors in and we don't say, hey, everything you're doing is wrong. But quickly, within a couple coaching calls, we can just level up their approach.
Yeah.
So stop doing average, move towards elite. And a lot of these things are blind spots, are called blind spots because you can't see them.
Yeah.
Is you need to ask for external feedback, because unless what you're doing now is overwhelming you with ideal clients, you need to be open to something else.
Yeah. Well, and I hope this is encouraging to you in that, you know, maybe before you felt like, before you downloaded this guide, you're like, I know there's a lot of things you can do and people do, but this sheet lays it out in a very simple to follow way. And you can just do an inventory of where am I putting my resources? Where am I putting my time? Where am I seeing outcomes? Or, wait, what am I not doing that? And again, we didn't say you should only do one. These things, many of them are going to be happening at the same time. But if you're not getting the prospects like you want to, which is almost every advisor, then what are you going to change the outcome? Mm-hmm. And we think the prospecting spectrum guide that we've made for you will give you a map to follow to start to travel and have better outcomes.
Yeah. And it looks nice too.
I am proud of our team.
You did good.
Our team did a great job. Yes. Thanks, Sten.
Thanks, bud.